And welcome to another edition of Soundography, a crash course in music, one band at a time. I'm Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And this week is near and dear to my heart. After the fun but massive catalog of Frank Zappa, this felt like dessert. This was absolutely dessert. And kind of a guilty pleasure of mine that Hammond had to suffer through.
It wasn't a whole lot of suffering. I have some commentary as someone who's newly inserted himself in the Spice Girls world.
Sure.
But I have to say that this was one of the more light and enjoyable bands we've done since, I don't know, like Duran Duran.
Yeah, for sure. Or Bay City Rollers.
Yeah, I mean, Bay City Rollers, yeah.
Like a lot of parallels you could draw to the Bay City Rollers.
Let's not tell Sandy that.
An all-boy group versus an all-girl group and kind of pop-targeted. Yes, the Spice Girls are the subject for today's Soundography. And this is just a fun week for me. Obviously, I mentioned because it's a labor of love. It's a guilty pleasure of mine. And when you just look at actual Spice Girls content, there's three albums. It's pretty easy to get through those, a bunch of singles and B-sides and stuff like that. But for this show, we're actually going to be focusing a lot on the post-Spice careers of some of the Spice Girls. Not all of them. I mean, we can talk about all of them, but three in particular who have been very prolific in releasing music since the breakup of the Spice Girls.
I was also impressed with the amount of like hidden secret track stuff, the rare stuff that was out there.
Yeah. Oh, there is a lot. Yeah. And it's surprising that there's some covers out there that for some reason ever got released and other things like that. But, all right. So, let's talk about, the current lineup or the not really current lineup. There's no current lineup. The classic lineup. Melanie Brown, Mel B, Scary Spice, Mel C or Melanie Chisholm, Sporty Spice, Emma Bunton, Baby Spice, Jerry Halliwell, Ginger Spice, that the original was Sexy Spice but changed to Ginger Spice, and Victoria Beckham, then Victoria Adams, Posh Spice. Initially, there was another woman named Michelle, who was part of the group, who was a Spice Girl before she got replaced with Emma Bunton. But I watched an interview with her. So it's funny, video-wise, you watch Spice World. And I watched a documentary on Quello. Quello's awesome, by the way. I don't know if I've told you about Quello. I certainly haven't mentioned it on this show. And
actually, you mentioned it last week about the Zappa documentary.
Oh, I did. That's right. Yes.
And I'm flirting with the idea of subscribing because it sounds like something that's right in my wheelhouse.
It really is. $7.99 a month, or you can prepay for a whole year and get it for cheaper than that. But it's basically an all concert Netflix. But they've also got some cool stuff like just channels that you can put up. So in the background while you're working, you can be running a Quello channel and it's going to curate content and play. Here's Sting and the Police doing Synchronicity 2. Here's Van Morrison doing Gloria, whatever. And just basically have a channel, almost like a Pandora channel with video. And there's apps for your PS4, for Apple TV, so you can have all this stuff on your regular TV as well as your computer and all your portable devices. So I watched a Spice Girls documentary, and I need to pull up the name of it because, oh, don't automatically play. Oh, it's not going to show me. I have to actually do the search thing. That's all right.
I actually watched the beginning of the 20-year Viva La Spice or whatever it was. It's on YouTube, and I was watching part of that. And it was interesting watching them at a very, well, young age starting to kind of work the Spice Girl angle.
Oh, totally. Okay, this one's called Raw Spice, the unofficial story of the making of the Spice Girls. So it's an unofficial documentary.
And hosted by Eddie Murphy?
No, but well, we do know there's a little bit of a connection there. No, so this is like a camera crew seemed to follow them around for maybe 3 or 4 days interviewing them, but this is all these recordings are like pre the release of the first album. Okay. This is as they were developing their personas. It has interviews with Michelle, whose name I can't remember, last name I can't remember.
The Forgotten Spice,
yes. And Michelle Stevenson, thank you.
We have a chat room I don't know about?
No, we don't have a chat room. I just pulled out and I'm thanking Wikipedia for being there when I need it. Thank you, Wikipedia. You're awesome. Anyway, Michelle Stevenson, who in interviews is like, yeah, I just wasn't gelling with the rest of the band. And I don't regret leaving. I regret not making all the money they made, but I don't regret leaving. And, you know, who knows if they still would have had the same chemistry had they not had Emma Bunton as part of the band, who, by the way, is responsible for the name Spice. They were originally going to be called Touch. And when they brought Emma Bunton on board, she suggested the name Spice. They found out there was an American rapper who was using the name Spice, so they decided to change their name to Spice Girls from that.
Okay.
Yeah. They formed in 1994 after an ad was placed in Stage newspaper, trade magazine, looking for singers to audition for a band. They had 400 women who attended the audition. They brought it down to about 12 and then picked the five through there. Again, Michelle being part of the five. And then when Michelle left, they brought in Emma Bunton, who had worked with the choreography woman, worked with her before. And so she was kind of a natural one to bring in as that fifth spot. But even back then, it didn't really seem like this documentary that they really had the sporty, scary baby, you know, kind of monikers and personalities. But as you're watching this documentary, and it is worth watching, Victoria, it feels like they didn't have something for Victoria. Like Melanie Chisholm came into this thing wearing jumpers and track suits and stuff like that. And so it just felt like a natural thing to call her sporty. And Jerry Halliwell doing the sexy Spice thing, but then kind of, all right, the red hair, we're just going to call her Ginger Spice. But it felt like they were saying, we need something for Victoria Adams. Let's make her posh, because there's nothing in these early shots, this early footage, that signifies that she's like upper class Gucci dress wearing, you know, pampered poodle kind of thing. It isn't until the album comes out that you really that she kind of takes on that role. So for her maybe to not feel as invested when you look at the movie Spice World isn't a big surprise.
Yeah, I noticed that actually during the film. It seemed as if she was, I mean, okay, cards on the table. They're mm-hmm. not great actresses.
No, no.
However, her performance even seemed less involved and less aware than right. anybody else's.
Right.
And it was, there were a couple times where it almost seems like they just stuck her there and said, you know what, just sit there because you're part of the band. Mm-hmm. There's the moment in the boat before they get dumped out where she just seemed like she just was there because she was told to be. Right. And then when they're all getting wet and jumping around during the choreography montage dancey thing, mm-hmm. when they're doing the obstacle course, it was like, she's like, no, I'm not doing it. And you can film me not doing it. And she just marched through it. I know right. it's supposed to be funny, but it seemed yeah, more like obstinance like instead
maybe
of humor.
This is kind of like the real thing. And yeah. Yeah, it's true.
It came across as obstinance and not funny.
Mm. Yeah. I totally could see that. It would totally fit in with, it's funny, it would fit in both with her persona that they gave her, but also kind of this early footage you see of her being, yeah, you know, I'm really excited to be part of this and but not really having a what's unique that you're bringing to the table kind of thing until they give her that posh
And even then, it seems kind of half done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because they're all wearing expensive clothes.
Right. Right. And really, when you look at their solo careers after the fact, the two Melanies, Emma and Jerry, have all released at least one solo album. And in the case of Melanie Chisholm, like six solo albums.
Yeah, Emma Bunton prolific.
Has released. Yeah. Emma Bunton, I think, has released four solo albums. Jerry has three. And Melanie Brown, I know at least one, maybe two. But of course, she's got a current gig on America's Got Talent as one of the judges that she's had for several years.
So I need to ask you a question before we kind of jump into
of
this.
Of course.
Did they have kind of a quote-unquote lead singer?
They never did. And I think, there were probably moments that they thought, all right, well, Jerry Halliwell should be kind of the quote unquote front woman on the band because she kind of represents the positivity, girl power ideal that they're trying to, promote. And there were times in the '90s where it seemed like she was kind of the quote unquote ambassador of the Spice Girls. Kind of funny that she became an actual ambassador, but I don't think they ever really had a true front woman.
Well, I did notice, and I seem to have picked up on it, not just in the movie, but in my listening, that Melanie Chisholm, she seems to be the one they relied on for a lot of the vocal gymnastics.
Yes, right. Like whenever there was a
Runs and things like that.
A harmonization, it would be the other four, and then Melanie Chisholm or Mel C doing a thing over the top of it, like a lot of improvisational, right, runs and stuff like that. Totally see that. And I think vocally, she is the most dynamic of the five as far as like range and vocal ability. I think Emma Bunton has developed that over time in her solo stuff. She was, you know, good in the Spice Girls. She's gotten really good since.
Yeah.
And I think Jerry Halliwell also good in as part of the Spice Girls, good in her first couple albums, but also has definitely developed her voice in the most recent album, the 2005 one that the name of which is escaping me right now, but
Passion.
But has a lot more passion. That's it. Has a lot more range, I think, in that album than she did in during the Spice Girls and even in her first couple.
And spoiler alert, if you look at our lists, all of that holds true.
Right, exactly. Yes. There's heavy weighting on Mel C in our lists. And
completely without conversation and completely without conversation.
Yeah, right. No, you and I both went that direction. And I've bought a lot of Mel C's solo stuff since she left. She's actually one of the holdouts why there's been difficulty arranging a Spice Girls reunion, is that she's just so happy in her current career that she doesn't feel the need to go back to that.
They're going to have to change it from Spice Girls to Spice Women or something because they're all getting a little older.
Right.
And more mature, and the girl part of it, I understand that it means something to them, sure. But as an audience, they need to kind of express that change in maturity, which I actually talk about later when we talk about the albums.
Are there going to be Spice Ladies at some point?
Well, and I was thinking, I mean, it's better than being called Old Spice.
Right, yes. Well, that's Madonna's.
Yes.
she gets that nickname. All right, let's cover some more of these basics, and then we're going to go album by album. The debut single, Wannabe, came out in 1996. Huge, just overnight sensation for them. They became huge in the UK, but then in America as well.
So Audrey's watching the movie with me. This movie, the song starts, and she's like, they did this? I'm like, yes, they did. She goes, I didn't know this song. With me, better make it fast. Now don't go wasting. And then at the end, they do Colors of the World, and she knew that one, too.
Oh, wow.
And I have to credit my wife, because it's not something I introduced her to.
No, Colors of the World. Is that the one, the Colors of the World? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Every point, every... Okay, Spice Up Your Life.
Yeah.
Yep. I saw you mention that later on. I was like, oh, that is that is that a different song that I'm thinking
no,
of?
No, it's that. It's that one. Said,
okay, yeah. Cool. Biggest selling female group in history. So bigger than the Supremes, bigger than TLC and Salt-N-Pepa. Of course, you always think about the iconic look, the five of them, obviously, the Union Jack dress that
the platform sneakers.
Right. Yes. Platform sneakers. Weird thing.
Which is that seems very contradictory because you can't sneak.
Right. Or, you can't. You're not going to run in those. Yeah,
there's no jumping rope in those.
Right. Yeah. Let's see here, covering some of these other things. Embrace merchandising and the press were featured worldwide in magazines, tabloids. No kidding. Such huge promotion for them, and so many books and toys. And I personally own the full collection of the Spice Girls on Tour. They are dolls. I'm not going to say action figures. In this case, they are dolls. They're still in the box, people. Nothing creepy going on here, but...
Now, did they make Spice Girls Pez dispensers? Because that's something I would want.
Oh, no kidding. I don't know if they did or not, but that would be perfect. Like, pop open Sporty's head and pull out a candy.
And have it be some, like, flavor that is, you know... Like, have it be cinnamon for ginger spice.
Right? Okay. What would
baby powder.
What would Scary's? Oh, God. Well, baby spice would be, what would it be? Like, formula flavor? Or maybe these are becoming bad ideas.
Yeah, okay, never mind.
This tastes like posh. when I bought the Spice Girls dolls on eBay, it was part of a full set of things, and it came with a tour program. It came with a couple of magazines, like British Teen Magazine, like talking about who was popular in the late 90s when this all was happening. It came with a page of what are called blue jeans rubdowns, so you can take your jeans and put Spice Girls logos on them, which I may do for Nerdtacular, we'll see. And then it came with a Spice Girls quote-unquote activity book. And what's cool about this is, like, it has all these questions about, well, what do you want to be when you grow up? And what's your own definition of girl power? And what do you do for fun? And it's all these, like, diary kind of pages where you can fill all this stuff out. And the coolest thing about this is that this eBay lot that I bought came with that book already filled out. And so it's little 12 or 13 year old girl who's just a huge fan of the Spice Girls. And she's, I like to hang out with my mates. Stuff like that in there. It's really, really cute. It's
speaking of hanging out with their mates, the woman in the movie that was their pregnant friend.
Yes.
Is that somebody we should know?
I didn't recognize her. I know it was Miranda Richardson was like their guide or something.
Yeah, the manager lady.
Yes, the late Miranda Richardson. Oh no, I'm sorry. She's still alive. No. Yeah, she's still alive. It was Natasha Richardson. That's right. That the Richardson that passed away, her sister.
Okay.
Passed away. No, I didn't recognize the pregnant okay. friend. Right. Yeah, oh my God, that movie though is so full of, like, great actors and musicians, Alan Cumming, George Wendt, Richard E. Grant, Meatloaf, Elvis Costello, Jules Holland from the band Squeeze, mm-hmm.
Roger Moore.
Elton John, Roger Moore playing a big part. You know, and it's funny because you never know if that movie's trying to be Austin Powers or Hard Day's Night or
Monty Python.
Right, exactly. Yes, it's that kind of disjointed, sketchy, like not sketchy like in hokey, but actual a bunch of sketches.
It's more vignette. It's more of a vignette movie.
Yeah.
And then I feel like the inside, we're kind of talking about the movie, so I'll throw this in now. I feel like the inside of the bus was designed by Doctor Who because it was a freaking TARDIS.
It was way bigger on the inside. Yes, for sure. That's funny. Yeah, totally. Absolutely. All right, let's go through let's go through the albums.
All right.
And we'll start with 1996 and the album called Spice, the big debut with, of course, Wannabe, Say You'll Be There, To Become One, big singles from that. I'm rocking and vibing, but somebody's jiving. You need to take a tip, sort it out, get a grip. Whenever I go out, wherever it may be, never is there a Kiana but a dupe looking at me. But then even if a disc is a loser on the dance floor, take a deep breath, count 1, 2, 3. Instant hit. 7 weeks Wannabe spent at number one. The album itself was number one for 15 consecutive weeks on the Billboard chart. They actually had credits, songwriting credits on the album.
Yeah, brilliant on their part that they were able to do that.
Because that was so much money on the back end, right? Yeah. Just so many, so much residual. They actually had problems prior to this with contracts. And initially, the two guys that they signed with didn't have them under contract. They were unhappy with the way they were being managed. So they did it on their own. They said, let's go find a new manager.
And they took their masters. They took the masters with them when they did it. Again, super brilliant on their part. Yeah. I mean, they might have been cheerful, dancey, harmonizing faces up front, but they're businesswomen on back there too.
And very smart businesswomen.
They know how to handle their stuff.
For sure. They have, their vocal styles are between each of them very different. Different enough that when you're listening to a song, you hear them do, they're all taking turns at singing a verse or something. Mm-hmm. And you can say, oh, that's clearly Emma, or that's clearly Mel C, or clearly Mel B, and that's, whatever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Totally unique voices altogether. And I don't know if I would have had that same, if I did have that same thing with like TLC or... you certainly didn't have different, the Supremes, all Diana Ross, pretty much. You just had your backing vocals.
I think the last time we had something where you could definitely tell the difference between when someone was singing different parts was the Beatles. I mean, so clearly were they singing different parts, and then the Spice Girls kind of were the same thing.
Yeah, and we had like 20 albums from Beatles to get used to their voices. We only had three with Spice Girls. Really good production on that. I mean, it's an album made of hooks. Yeah. It's all hooks. And does really well at that. You weren't a fan of a couple of like the slow jam style.
Yeah, I am not a fan of the slow jam style. And everyone should know what I mean by that. That slow jam ballad style, that kind of R&B slow. I cannot get behind it. It's not something I'm good with.
And are you referring to "To Become One"?
I think so. There were a couple on there.
Time Lover is like a little slow jam, and then
I think Naked is the weakest song on the album.
I agree. Yeah.
They also had a book called Girl Power. Brian, how was it?
I have never read it. Oh. I'm ashamed to admit I don't own that. And my Spice Girls memorabilia is limited to what I just described right there.
Did you see on Twitter I actually introduced you to the lady who has the largest collection in the world?
You did. And I looked at her tweets, her posts. There's some impressive stuff in her collection. I don't think I'm ever going to be able to compete with that. And that's fine. I'm totally okay with that.
So what songs stand out, or what's your overall takeaway from this one?
For me, it's the singles. Mm-hmm. Wannabe, Say You'll Be There, To Become One. The first three tracks on the album, their biggest songs from that album. It's kind of like, let's just front load all the good songs at the very top. Who Do You Think You Are? We're talking about kind of the other songs on the album that are good. But the other ones are well-produced, hook-laden, but not something that really jumps out.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. They follow that up the next year with the album Spice World. Kind of a, I don't know if you want to call it a soundtrack, but released really close to the same time, a year before the movie. But the movie was certainly to promote the album, and they filmed, you know, obviously because of filming, they filmed the album while the filmed the movie while the album was in its heyday. This was the apex of the Spice Girls' success. Yeah. Fall 1997. They were, still the biggest sellers of 1997 and 1998. In 1997, they fired Simon Fuller so that they could run the group themselves. Mm-hmm. And they started doing a lot of cross promotion or a lot of endorsements.
Yes.
Move Over is basically the Pepsi generation. Mm-hmm. Song it was written for. Yeah. Seems like, you know, they used it for Pepsi, but you can't tell which came first, the Pepsi asking him to do a song or they did that song and said, oh, we can use this for Pepsi. About this, Jack in the Box made spicy crispy chicks.
Yes,
really?
They did. I looked it up. Jack in the Box actually made this thing called spicy crispy chicks, and then later they followed it up with a campaign for the meaty cheesy boys.
I have to look at this thing because I can't believe this is really a thing. But
go ahead, you can look it up because it's funny. Right.
Oh, seriously. So this is like, it totally is like the faux Spice Girls.
Mm-hmm.
Promoting Jack in the Box.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. But not really the actual Spice Girls. Oh, that is great. And I love meaty cheesy boys. I'll look that one up after after the show today. Jerry Halliwell left the band in May and turned them into a quartet.
Did she leave for a specific reason, or did she have like a career opportunity?
I don't know. It was... because I can't imagine it was like, that it was like a amicable or not an amicable, like a, they had fights or anything like that. Her official statement was that I'm confirming I've left the Spice Girls. This is because of differences between us. I'm sure the group will continue to be successful. I wish them all the best. She was having some problems with exhaustion. It was, you know, there were rumors of fights with Melanie Brown and that sort of thing. And it's, you know, it's like at this point, this is their peak of their career. It's like John Lennon saying, yeah, I'm leaving the Beatles. I'm going to go do my own thing.
Yeah.
But she went on to do her own thing as like a, obviously a solo performer and, then a, I'm pulling it up here because I want to make sure I get it right. Like a Goodwill ambassador. Is that the deal? Want to find this out because there was some, here we go. Spice Girls reunion. Nope. Before that, she left the Spice Girls due to depression and differences between the group. Okay, why did I think that she had some sort of ambassadorship? Oh, here it is, right here. Yes, she's a she became a representative for the United Nations Population Fund.
Oh, okay.
And worked with the United Nations. Visited Zambia from in November of 2000 to promote greater international awareness of. The urgent need to reduce maternal death and halt the spread of HIV and AIDS. So a lot of non-musical kind of support that she did in the early 2000s for that, just outside of music.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of cool though, that she was broader than, again, more than just the harmonizing, singing, happy person on stage.
For sure. And I think that, you know, that business sense that we talked about earlier in the show, I think a lot of that did come from her, is that she was She was kind of the one that led them to look for other management when they weren't happy with the way that they were being managed initially, and especially without a contract, and said, all right, well, we can, you know, we can put our name on the songs, do some songwriting so that we get some royalties on that side, and also look for our own management, and then eventually taking it on themselves.
Yeah. So the one thing I noticed is two albums in a row, the first song is awesome. They really know how to start an album. They get you energized and pulled up right off the bat. They know how to get you going. This is the one, The Colors of the World. What's the real song?
Spice of Your Life.
Yes. I found a video that had the lyrics. I understand it's not supposed to be, but it comes across a little racist.
Really? Okay, hold on. Let's see. Let's spice up your life. Lyrics. Let's see here. There we go. Lyric Wikia is going to be our source for that. All right. When you're feeling sad and low, we'll take you where you got to go. Smiling, dancing, everything is free. All you
hit
need
the second
is...
verse.
Okay. Slam it to the left. No, not that one. Oh, here we go. Yellow Man in Timbuktu. Right off the bat, Color for Both Me and You, Kung Fu Fighting, Dancing Queen, Tribal Spaceman, and all that's in between. Yeah, what's up with that? That's a little weird. Huh.
I understand they're making tons of references to other things. Dancing Queen's an ABBA reference. Kung Fu Fighting is the song,
Carl
whatever.
Weathers. Carl Douglas? Carl Douglas.
Carl Weathers is Rocky's friend.
Right, yes. Apollo Creed, right.
But it took me by surprise because I'm listening along and all of a sudden I'm like, what?
Yeah, that does seem for a positivity-laced, you know, bringing everybody together kind of thing. You'd think that somebody at some point would have looked at those lyrics and said, hey, could we maybe change this word yellow to something else?
Well, I understand. If the colors of the United Colors of Benetton was still doing its thing, they would have used this song. I mean, I know what they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But maybe lighten up a little bit.
Right. Yeah. That's kind of funny. Wow. Didn't even catch that.
I will also say, though, overall, this album feels like a little less effort was put into the writing of it. Lots more repetition. I didn't feel like it was quite as engaging lyrically. Mm-hmm. I think part of that might be because it was released just 9 months after the last one. So it's, I think that it felt like
less time.
They had less time to work the songs before they recorded them.
Right.
But for whatever reason, I felt like this one just had a little... The last one had some stuff on there that I knew and hung on to and really liked and had more of it. This one had less. And the next album actually had even fewer things.
Oh, for sure. Now, the second album for me, I like way more than the first one because, again, they front load it. So you got Spice Up Your Life, Stop, and Too Much, the three biggest singles from that album.
Just walk in, I make you smile. It's cool, but you don't even know.
Also got Move Over, the aforementioned Pepsi commercial Move Over. You've got The Ladies of Vamp, which is really good.
Hey, that's on my list.
Okay, I won't mention that. I won't mention that anymore. But I mean, it seems like where Spice starts out strong and then here's all kind of the throwaway songs at the end. This one at least has a few better songs scattered after you get the first three big singles right there.
I will give you that. It felt like it didn't sound as rich. It just felt like it was rushed.
Yeah. Yeah. Could be. Yeah. Around that time, I know, I guess that was 1997, but before they came out with their next album, you'd actually see a solo album from Jerry Halliwell, the Schizophonic album in 1999.
Great title, by the way.
Great title. A couple of really good songs on there, like the first track, Look at Me, which is really good. Mi Chico Latino, for some reason, kind of fun. But she's got a very nasal delivery through that album that you don't see on the later albums, thank goodness. But
I've got a secret, I cannot keep it. It's just a whisper of a distant memory. Just a dream, or so it seems. Take me back to the place I'd rather be. You left a fire in my eyes that lightens up the darkest skies. I'm giving up.
Just something that I picked up on that. She also did a cover of These Boots Are Made for Walking that she recorded for the soundtrack to Rugrats in Paris.
Yes.
And forced me to buy that album.
I thought it was interesting that Masters were made for a live album that was never released.
Yeah, I wonder why that is. It seems like even, you know, the further that you get from their apex of popularity, you would not want to sit on those recordings and not release them and get some money out of it. I know if they're waiting for a potential reunion and say, oh, here's that lost live album that we have but never released. It just seems like you'd want to jump on that and release that as quickly as possible.
Do you think that Jerry might have it tied up with some contract thing? Because maybe she was there and then they didn't release it because she left or something like that?
It's possible. Yeah. for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mentioned this to you before we recorded. I want to make sure I mention it now. Mm-hmm. This watching the Spice World movie made me want to watch MTV's parody movie Together.
Right.
It's a parody of boy bands that came out in like 2000, I think. It has classics like You Plus Me Equals Us and Say It, Don't Spray It.
I love it. I'm going to have to go watch that. I wonder, is it live? Not live. Is it streaming anywhere?
No.
And they followed that one up. So Spice Girls, Spice World. And then around that time also, in addition to Jerry Halliwell's solo album, Melanie C started doing her first solo album, which is called Northern Star. Came out the same year as what would become the Spice Girls' last album. And I wonder if they knew that this was going to be their last album as they were recording it. Obviously the big single from that is, they had a couple big singles. They had Holler, which was again, first track on the album, big single.
Yep.
Let's front load this thing. They must think that people are just going to run out of steam when they're listening to an album and say, let's put all the good stuff at the very beginning, because as they go through, we don't care if they come back and say, oh, that was a great song.
Well, I think they really do epitomize the idea of a B-side.
Yeah. Yeah. an album B-side as opposed to a single?
Yeah. I mean, the entire backside of that thing, if you're going to flip it over, is substantially weaker than the front side.
Right. Yeah, totally.
I mean, Zappa, the front side of his stuff in the 60s, was kind of cohesive. You flip the record over, and it was not. These guys, they put all their effort into the side A, because they figured you're just going to lift the needle back up and put it back at the beginning without flipping that thing over.
Right. The song, by the way, Song Goodbye, they actually released around the time that Jerry Halliwell left the band. Like, they released that in 1998, just a few months after Jerry left the band. And I think it was kind of a tribute to her. And then it would actually get put onto the album until 2000. It wouldn't get put on until they released their four-piece album, which was way more... I don't know. It seemed like they were trying to go in kind of a TLC, not necessarily hip hop, but more of an R&B kind of direction.
The production values of this one sounded so TLC. It was so R&B produced.
There
was something to it that changed from kind of poppy dance to more of an R&B vibe.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And didn't do well financially or with critics. It was like, all right, yeah, they're whether or not they knew this was going to be it. And naming an album Forever, Spice Girls Forever, does kind of sound like, all right, we're admitting that maybe this is it for us.
Well, one of the things I can say after listening to Forever was this more mature sound they developed made me wonder why they were never asked to do a Bond theme.
Right. And, you know, there's one of the songs that you'll find in my list is from the Spice World album, Too Much, which felt like it could have been a Bond thing. And even the way they use it at the very beginning of the movie Spice World is kind of Bondian in its delivery.
Yes, it was. I noticed that. And then having Roger Moore in there, I'm like, really?
Yeah. That's just, you're just going to double down on their Bond. Yeah. Right.
They did have number ones three Christmases in a row, which I guess is a really big deal. The fact that they were able to maintain year-to-year consistency of popularity so they could have number one songs year-to-year, which...
Way bigger in the UK than here. Like, that's one of the whole underlying plot lines in the movie Love Actually is who's going to be the Christmas number one. And you don't see that here in America as much as you do in the UK.
Is it a shopping thing? So if you're number
one... It must be,
I do think that they became less energetic from album to album. It could be maturity, it could be age, it could be production, it could be writing, it could lots of variables.
Right.
But the energy level, even kind of perceived excitement level as I was listening, tended to drop percentage-wise with each passing album. Mm-hmm. And I still, this one was good. I mean, they do a really traditional version of Sleigh Ride. I was expecting something a little more Spice Girly.
Right. No, but it's a very straightforward delivery of that song. They also do a great cover of The Waitress's Christmas Wrapping.
Yes.
I don't know if I gave you that one, or did you find that one on Spotify?
I found it on my own.
Okay. Yeah. So they basically, and you know, after the release of the album, of the Forever album, they announced that they were on indefinite hiatus. They wanted to make sure that people knew that we're not splitting up, but we're on indefinite hiatus, which they still are on today.
Well, no, they've had some other performances and appearances in between.
The London Olympics and a concert tour in the 2000s, mid to late 2000s.
2007, I think.
Was it all five of them, or was it? It was just the four.
I couldn't tell you that.
It doesn't say here in my notes, and I'm looking at it here. Looks like it actually might have been all five of them. Dang, I wish I would have seen that.
And all five, were at the Olympics too, right?
Yes. Yeah. That I did see in 2012, the 2012 Summer Olympics. They performed at the closing ceremony, doing "Wannabe" and "Spice Up Your Life." I don't know if they used that same lyric, or if they, you know, took advantage of the fact that it was a medley and decided, let's insert some "Wannabe" right here.
Let's skip the second verse of this one.
Right. Exactly. But it became the most tweeted moment of the Olympics. 116,000 tweets per minute on Twitter about their performance.
Good ones? Bad ones? Indifferent?
Probably good ones. Probably a lot of fans like, oh my God, OMG, they're together. Around that same time, Jennifer Saunders from Absolutely Fabulous worked with Simon Fuller and Judy Kramer to develop a Spice Girls musical in London.
This is a recurring theme for our show.
It kind of is, right?
Season one, there were the musicals this season.
Totally. And again, I'd love to see this. I wish this would make a run in Vegas or something. I'd make a special trip out to see the Viva Forever Spice Girls musical.
Oh, I'd join you. We could do a whole thing around this.
Totally. But very much, you know, the lyrics of the songs, they pull out characters kind of like Mamma Mia did for ABBA, where they use the story use the songs to tell the story, Moving Out, the Billy Joel musical, things like that. So they actually reunited again for the premiere of the musical at the Piccadilly Theater in the West End, and kind of did their, I think, really one of the last times that they all appeared together to date.
And then in 2016, Mel B, Emma, and Jerry started Spice Girls Gem. And it took me a minute to figure out what that was. I actually wrote in the notes, what's that? But then I realized it's Jerry, Emma, and Mel.
Okay.
I thought it was Jim, like Jim and the Holograms, for a really long time. But right. then yes, I started thinking about the fact that, no, they're actually using their own initials to form Jem. So I guess they're a trio now?
Yeah, I don't know if they're actually releasing music, or if they're just using that as kind of a promotion for the previous stuff that they've released, because now it's like the 20th anniversary of Wannabe.
So we should be getting a giant box set then.
Yes. Oh my God. It's any time, isn't it? Yeah, now that you say that.
Blu-rays, box sets.
Exactly.
A commemorative Union Jack sparkly dress with your box set, limited to 10,000 copies.
Where can I buy it? I'm going to wait in line right now for sure. And, you know, you see a couple names missing from that list. We mentioned that Mel C is kind of really happy with her solo career and isn't reconnecting with them for this thing. But also you see the Victoria Beckham, who's really, as far as post Spice Girls stuff, done the least musical out of the five, and married David Beckham, soccer player, football player if you're outside the US, soccer player if you're in the US, and has just pretty much been a celebrity, you know, kind of one of those making appearances and the paparazzi following her kind of thing, but not appearing in movies or doing anything musical or
anything
like that.
And even those things have dropped off significantly in recent years, unless me being a cord cutter just means I'm not seeing it.
No, because I'm not seeing it either.
Yeah.
So, yep. So that kind of takes us to some more of the solo albums. We can talk a little bit about that. So some of the other recent releases since the actual indefinite hiatus of the band, Emma Bunton has released a couple albums, A Girl Like Me and Free Me, Life in Mono.
Life in Mono was really pretty good.
It was, yeah. And again, it's, you know, as they get further from the group and doing their own things, I think they each develop their own sound even further on that. And Life in Mono, not only some great songs on it, but also some great covers on there as well.
So if you really love me, say yes. But if you don't, dear, confess. But please don't tell me.
Is that the one with that has What I Am? Or is that something
else? A Girl Like Me.
Yeah, that's
from 2001.
Okay, What I Am, hands down, one of my favorite songs of all time. And when I saw she covered it, I was really impressed because it's not an easy song to sing.
No, there's so much Edie Burkell delivery that you can't do in a cover without sounding like you're just aping the way she sang it, for sure.
I would really like to hear Emma do covers of Olivia Newton-John and ABBA stuff.
Oh, interesting. She has a very Olivia Newton-John style softness in her voice.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. Crickets Sing for Anna Maria. She does a great cover of Perhaps, Perhaps, Perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
by Desi Arnaz. But of course, Cake had a great version of that as well. So really good solo career developing with Emma. Jerry Halliwell solo stuff.
She seems to really like the 70s sound. Maybe that's where her voice fits.
Very much so. But, yes, kind of the... go ahead, I'm sorry.
But I was just going to say that one, the Bag It Up, that she did.
Yes.
Sounds like it's going to be a dance disco dance craze. It screamed like late 70s dance craze. I like midnight, it's when I'm in the mood. But he likes the morning, that's when he's rude. Just a bad case of opposite sex. Have to look to the stars. All we need is a little respect. Cause men are from being
totally does. And kind of doing the same stuff that Shirley Bassey did in the 90s with that retro lounge, lots of horns kind of disco sound.
Yeah. She did a version of Raining Men again, a really safe version of it.
Right.
I would have liked to maybe heard her do something more spice girly with it.
A little more out of the box.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Definitely. She's good. She's, kind of like what we're saying with Emma, where her voice has developed a lot more in the last few years than it was in the Spice Girls and for her first couple solo albums. She was a little more nasal in those first solo albums. And
I really enjoyed Passion.
Depth.
I really enjoyed Passion. In fact, the album's kind of bookended with two really vintage-sounding songs.
Yes.
And the rest of the album's a little bit diverse, might be a word. Schizophrenic might be another word.
Yeah.
Lots of different...
Let me say schizophrenic, right?
Lots of different styles and vocal treatments in the middle, but those, the beginning and the end, those bookends are really, really good.
Yeah. And she's released... she's released a greatest hits album in the last year called Playlist, and I haven't looked yet to see if there's any bonus content on that, but just those three solo albums, Schizophrenic, Scream If You Want to Go Faster, and Passion, so nothing in the past 10-11 years.
Yeah.
But she's a judge on Australia's Got Talent and was on the X Factor in the UK and done some stuff like that. She was a contestant for the Great Sport Relief Bake Off.
Sport Relief Bake Off.
I don't know what that means. Yeah. She appeared in the sequel of Crank.
Really?
Oh, I might have to look for that. Yeah.
Crank 2.
Crank 2 High Voltage.
That's the one where he gets electrocuted. He keeps having to shock himself.
Oh, really? To
yeah.
keep his adrenaline
heart going.
Up?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm putting this on the film sack list. This has got to be on there. And now let's get to Mel C, the most prolific of the Spice Girls when it comes to solo albums.
And I think the best voice of the solo stuff we listen to.
For sure. Yeah. She's just so dynamic in her voice and can do dance music. You know, mm-hmm. dance club kind of stuff, but also do adaptations of Broadway music really, really well.
Really
diverse thing. And actually just came out with her newest album called Version of Me. She's had 7 solo albums, Northern Star, Reason, Beautiful Intentions, This Time, The Sea, Stages, which is that all Broadway cover album, and then Version of Me, which just came out.
And it was hard for me not just put all my stuff from there, because you know how I am with show tunes.
Totally. Yeah, I know.
Prog metal and show tunes.
Written basically for you. She actually played Mary Magdalene in the Jesus Christ Superstar run from 2012 to 2013.
They all have a very theatrical sound to their voice. You could tell that they were trained by theater singers.
Yep.
By the way they can belt and then move into their lower registers without hurting their voices.
For sure.
It's very theatrical in the way they were trained.
No argument at all. Yeah, for sure.
So, Got My Life sounds like she was really singing to someone in particular.
Nobody
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. The lyrics seem very personal.
That's on the first, yeah. The first solo album?
Yeah. Uh-huh. It was funny. I was familiar with Company, but I hadn't listened to Company in a very long time. So I'm listening to Another 100 People, and I write it down. Love this song. Sounds like something a Sondheim musical. I'll be damned if it wasn't from a Sondheim musical.
That's funny. So you didn't catch it until looked it up. That's great.
But I knew it sounded like Sondheim. I'm like, wow, she's doing this kind of an homage to Sondheim. And no, it's a cover of Sondheim.
Right. Oh, that's funny.
I know she does I Know Him So Well, which is from mm-hmm. Chess, which is awesome.
Oh, such a great song. And there's another kind of ABBA connection too, right? Because that was partially written by...
Benny Rice, Bjorn Ulvaeus, Elaine Page, and somebody else. I can't think of
the last one. Bjorn Ulvaeus from ABBA is who I was trying to think of. Yep. More solo stuff. So you look at these albums like Reason is a very dance pop. You know, you could hear it. You could easily imagine hearing this stuff in a club. Even some of Northern Star, mm-hmm. the same thing. And then as you go through her catalog, her later stuff feels a little bit more personal. This Time, very personal. And then the most recent album, Version of Me, way less pop and just kind of like a good, just solid singer-songwriter album.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much so. Mm-hmm. I would like to know the percentage of input she has as a writer, because everyone works with a writing team when they get to a certain level of stuff, mm-hmm. As far as arranging and lyrical content and all that kind of stuff, even the way the songs start to shape and take tone, all is part of the process of writing. And I'd love to know what her input percentage is. Is it 75? Is it 80? Is it 95? Just to see where she falls in that.
Right. It'd be interesting to see, cause it always feels like the stuff that she writes is very personal. So, I would be surprised if it wasn't a high percentage of her songs are written by her or mostly written by her. She worked with, the Sons of Sonics, a London duo on Numb. That's the closing song of I guess it's track 6 of the new album. Right in the middle there.
Did you see my note on that?
I did see your note. I totally agree. It does sound like the Art of Noise. Very Art of Noise-esque.
It will only make you numb. And you won't be numb.
So that's funny. But definitely worth checking out. I mean, if you like any of the Spice Girls stuff, it's not the produced pop sound of the Spice Girls, but the new album is good. It's a good solid album. Yeah.
Yep. Cool. All right. Shall we get into some stats?
Let's get into some stats. We know they're big. How big were they?
First single, Wanna Be, was number one in 37 countries.
Wow.
Spice sold 31 million copies. Brian, how many did you buy?
I did only buy one, but only count 31 million copies. It's huge. That's
crazy numbers. Yeah,
for sure.
Especially at the tail end of the 90s when things were starting to really change for the music industry.
Totally. And people were, a lot more piracy was going on. And so you had that. It was before people could buy the single, but still.
They might have been the last band to actually have giant worldwide numbers like this before 2000 iTunes, Napster, all that stuff.
Oh, right. Yes.
They might have been the last worldwide thing to hit like this.
For sure. Yep.
Their second album, Spice World, sold 20 million copies worldwide. And then they've got 80 million records worldwide. They're the best-selling female group of all time and the biggest British pop act since the Beatles. Wow. Now, let's think about that in perspective. Beatles have how many albums?
Around 20.
They have three.
Three, yeah. that is crazy. And you know what? As much as you heard all these other comparisons to the Beatles over the years, like, oh, the Knack, we're going to be bigger than the Beatles. And, oh, different Tilbrook, they're the next best songwriting duo since Lennon-McCartney. I don't ever remember hearing anyone around the Spice Girls camp saying we're going to be bigger than the Beatles.
No, the way they presented themselves, it felt like they were going to be bigger than the Power Rangers, and they just happened to end up bigger than the Beatles.
Well, there's so many funny parallels you could draw between the Spice Girls and the Power Rangers, right? Oh, that's fantastic. All right, let's get to our Stairway to Heaven song. I like this. Easy choice, right? Is there, could it be anything but Wannabe?
Yeah, really? It's the only option.
I'm pulling up. Okay, well, guess what? We're wrong.
What?
This is the funniest thing, and I think it really lends itself more to when they were touring, but Spice Up Your Life is their number one played song in concert.
Man.
204 times they did Spice Up Your Life in concert, only 167 times for Wannabe. But okay, the rest of the list pretty easy to predict.
Wow.
Say You'll Be There, Stop, Mama, which I'm surprised Mama was as big a hit. It's such a slow... It was really like them kind of saying to all their fans, hey, make sure you're very respectful of your parents and you're going to need them someday and you got to make sure you love them. And
well, I was really hoping that it was going to be a cover of the Genesis song.
Great. Just hear Scary Spice doing that. Too Much, To Become One, Viva Forever, all that. We Are Family, a cover of the Sister Sledge. Where Did Our Love Go? I got to find a copy of that. I've never even heard that they did a cover of the Supremes' Where Did Our Love Go? Where have I been all my life without having that one?
Guess what's getting played Monday at the second song.
Right, exactly.
I don't care what their request is. It's Halloween or not, it's happening.
Are You Gonna Go My Way by Lenny Kravitz, another song they covered 47 times in concert.
Do you have that one?
No.
This is like a wish list for you.
Shake Your Body Down to the Ground by the Jacksons. They covered that 46 times.
That would have been awesome.
Totally. Let's shake, let's stop, take your body down to the ground. Oh, I'm finding all these when we're done here. It's got to be.
This is not like a list of statistics. This is like a shopping list for you.
Where is the box set?
Yep, I'm telling you. little bedazzled Union Jack scarf for Brian Ibbett.
Yeah, that's don't give them any ideas. They'll probably do that, and I'll get stuck buying the damn thing.
How does Tina feel about your Spice Girls problem?
Oh, she's fine with it. She has her Real Housewives of fill in the blank. I'm just looking. They do have a Live at Wembley DVD from 1998. I'm just looking to see. No, it's funny that there aren't other that they don't really have a live album. All right. What's next? So we did the tour statistics. Let's get to our five songs.
I'm still shocked by the Stairway to Heaven song.
Yeah, right. I think it's because it's got Spice in the title. And you know what? If you're going to do a concert, this is probably your lead. This is how you're going to come out, is doing Spice Up Your Life.
And with as little as their catalog, as tiny as their catalog was, I can also see them closing it with it too. No, and I'm not being snarky. Right. I'm actually being...
No, but yes, totally like a... yeah. I wonder if that's why they have it so many times. I think when you do it twice in concert, it probably... it probably counts twice on the list.
I mean, they barely have enough to fill an hour and a half show.
Right. Oh, that's funny. I had to take a look here too and see if the DVD. No, I want the one that comes with a DVD. There's got to be like a, here's all of our music videos on DVD, but I don't know where they are. Anyway. All right. So our top five songs. All right. We broke our rule this time, or we pretty much just both agreed that we weren't going to follow our rule of nothing on the greatest hits, because they have three albums. They have, you know, whatever that turns out to be, about 40 songs.
Yeah.
When you count B-sides.
They actually have less music, I think, as a band than Patsy Cline did.
Right. I think you're right. I think you're totally right. So a couple of our songs are definitely going to be things that you'd find on the on their greatest hits. The first of which, on my in my case, is something you'd find on the greatest hits. It is To Become One.
A dream of you and me together. Say you believe it. Say you believe it. Free your mind of doubt and danger. Be for real. Don't be a stranger. We can achieve it. We can achieve
it. I don't know what it is about this song, but the slow motion video, black and white video with the cityscapes behind them and the weird lyrics about condoms. I don't understand why they have that in there, but whatever. Hey, for whatever reason, I really like this song. You're talking about lyrics. Are you looking at the lyrics to Become One now?
It also was the subject of one of my favorite lines in the movie where they get the ticket and the guy goes, three become one, and they walk in when the guy at the security gate wasn't letting him in. A little film crew.
I didn't catch that. Yeah. Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, it was one of this impetus of one of my favorite jokes in the film.
Oh, that's funny. I'll have to take a look at that. Second one is an Emma B solo single from her album Life in Mono. It's a cover of the song Life in Mono originally by the artist Mono. Some antibiotics just reading that last sentence that I did, but really, really good, original. And she does a really good job with it, with her really soft vocals. I think Emma had the, you know, like you said, the Olivia Newton-John kind of honey smooth delivery of her vocals.
Yeah.
We'll go over to Sporty for the next one from her Stages cover album. It's a cover of Both Sides Now. One of my favorite songs.
Got in my way. I've looked at clouds from both sides now. From up and down. And still somehow it's cloud illusions. I recall.
Whoever covers it, it's just such a great song, and you can cover it in so many different ways.
Didn't Carrie Carpenter do a version of this?
Probably, yeah.
Anyway, it's a great song, and
Joni
I'm glad
Mitchell, of course, did the original.
Yeah.
Jason Faulkner does my favorite version of it all
time. Maybe she didn't do one, but anyway, it's a fantastic song, and I'm really glad it made your list.
Yeah, for sure. Melt, this is from Mel C's solo album Reason, and this is for me the kind of the highlight of that album, and its dancey poppiness. It's just really, really good.
Give a little bit of love for your people, but save a little bit of love for yourself. Have a little bit of trust in the way you feel and see your heart melt.
A really good dance pop song. And the aforementioned Too Much, which is the from their Spice World album, and also kind of the James Bond style introduction credit sequence for the movie Spice World. If they were ever going to do a James Bond song, that's definitely going to be it.
Yeah. Or at least something very similar to that.
Correct. Yeah.
Which also makes me wonder if they were familiar with Spy Hard.
Love is blind as far as the eye can see. Deep and meaningless words to me. He's a lover, I need a friend.
Right? Yeah, the Weird Al Yankovic thing. Why doesn't he have a musical? Hey, I'm going to be seeing him a week from today.
Are you really?
Live in concert. Yeah, he's performing at BlizzCon. That's giving people an idea of when we record these shows. But A week from today, he will be the closing ceremony performer at BlizzCon in California. And so I'll be seeing.
Hodor is also DJing there somewhere.
Yes, he is at Con Before the Storm, but there's a party Friday night that I'm really excited about.
I wish
I'm going to hold the door for him.
I really wish there was a way I could convince my wife that BlizzCon is something that I need to do for work, for this work. But because all I play is Hearthstone, it's a really, really hard sell for me.
It's a hard sell. You know, you could just go out to California and not do the con, but do the guild hall, because there's all sorts of fun stuff that go on the guild hall.
It's still a hard sell because all I play is Hearthstone. Yeah.
No, what you just need to do is give up on any other side projects and fun things you do and play World of Warcraft, get hooked on that, and Overwatch, and then you'll be hooked.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to your...
All right, my list. So yes. I started with Say You'll Be There from Spice. Yeah. I like it because it is a fun, dancey, pop, all-female song that happens to have actually a really cool harmonica part.
Totally does. If this wouldn't have been on your list, it would have been on mine. I love this song.
And it also has
an accompanying video.
It also has a really cool kind of short female rap breakdown in it too.
Right.
So it kind of covers a wide spectrum of what the Spice Girls did musically in 1 3.5 minute piece of music.
I'll give you everything on this, I swear.
Yeah.
Right.
My next one is Suddenly Monday from Northern Star, which is one of Mel C's... because it sounds like Randy Newman wrote it.
It's got that that piano. Blunk, blunk, da-dun, 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 da-dun. Yes. Oh, it totally does now that you say that.
And
she always comes in. I'm driving down the highway listening to a song. I used to be a Spice Girl.
I am now no longer. No, it's a great song. And I actually looked up the writing credit because I'm like, oh, she's covering Randy Newman. She pulled this on me before. I'm not doing it again. But no, it's not. It just happens to be in that style. And if you have any love and affection for Randy Newman songs, this is where to start with her.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, that's great. That's totally great.
And then the aforementioned Another 100 People from Company by Stephen Sondheim. Strangers, some come to stay, some to stay, and every day the ones who stay can find each other in the crowded streets and the guarded parks, by the rusty fountains and the dusty trees and the battered parks, and they walk together past the posted walls with a crude red any excuse to mention Sondheim and bring up Sondheim, I will do. But it makes me want to have her sing with a male version, you know, have her sing like Have a Little Priest or By the Sea from Sweeney Todd. You know, I want to hear her kind of sing some of the darker stuff from some of these Sondheim parts.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that would be cool. Yeah, no
sing,
kidding.
Have her sing the part of the baker's wife in Into the Woods.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So,
Light My Candle from Rent.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Good. Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, man. Totally want to follow up. Stages 2, Mel C. Get on it.
Yep. I also chose The Lady is a Vamp from Spice World. Bond, babe, kick some ass. Doctor, know this girl's got class. Charlie's Angels, girls on top. Handbags, heels, their pistols rock. Baby lover, soul glam queen. Sing the blues, a love supreme. Sixties Twiggy set the pace. Way back then she had the face. This song is so well put together as a song. It doesn't sound like Spice Girls too much at the beginning. It's got a lot of different kind of almost film noir sounds to it.
Yep.
And then there are so many pop culture references to vamps.
Would you say that this is their Vogue?
I would. That's actually a really good comparison.
Yeah, that's what I thought of when I heard it. Yes. It's very Madonna Vogue.
Yes, it is. Very much so.
Mm-hmm. But in a good way, not a copycat way, but definitely in a good way.
Yeah. Then I chose Downtown by Emma in Life in Mono. This is not a risky cover, but it's a really, really good cover of a fantastic song.
Yeah, Petula Clark did the original. It totally is very good delivery of it. And she's got a great voice for it.
And this brings, that really sold me on the theatrical training of their voices, because she sings it like she's in a musical, not just on stage singing pop stylized vocals. She's belting it out like you would if you had theatrical training.
Oh, for sure. Good choice. Very good choice. Excellent. All right. Well, I think anything else before we close out on our Spice Girls time? I want to just savor this moment that we're talking about Spice Girls.
Well, I can say that before I saw them as almost a musical punchline in many ways, but now having waded through the pool of Spice Girls, I have a lot more respect for them as musicians and singers and writers, and then even post Spice Girl, some of the things they've done have proven to me that they're more than just kind of singing marionettes for the music industry, which there were a lot of during the late 90s, early 2000s.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, totally. My love for the Spice Girls, let's just be honest with ourselves, right? is not an ironic, you know, like, oh, I like them because they're kitschy 90s, blah. No, it's like, it's because I really genuinely enjoy this music. And it's a weird, you know, it's a weird guilty pleasure to have, but I own it. Yeah. And I'm totally fine with that. And,
well, don't think I won't make fun of you for it still, but I'm going to do it with a lot more knowledge than I did before.
Be my guest. I'll take that. I'll totally accept
these will that. These will be deep cut jokes. They won't just be surface level jokes.
Great. excellent. I think that's good.
No, that's actually really good, because that just means I'm paying attention to the thing you love.
Cool. All right. Well, we're going to close out here. We're going to tell you that... next week,
we're doing Dream Theater.
We are not doing Dream Theater. Is that everybody's a chance to take a drink now? No, this is interesting because this is kind of the last for this season, the last band episode we've done. Now we're going to be focusing our next episode on a year in music. We've worked together and chosen a year in music, and we're going to look at the releases, the big singles from that year, the notable events in music, and just kind of how that year affected that year in music affected all the years that came after. And that year is going to be, so excited about this, 1984, perfect year for music.
Yeah, it really is. And after having done some preliminary research, I think it might be the year that you and I had been walking the same path and then diverted.
Right. Yeah, probably. I can totally see that. Before you started getting hooked on all that prog stuff, and before I started going into the weird J-pop. Yeah.
But I think it'll be interesting. And also, I think we're also going to try to make our playlists at the end actually be songs, be five, or instead of five songs, be 10 songs each. Give a wider variety, because it's a whole year we're talking about, not just one band.
Totally. I even want to throw in a couple. They're not going to replace my song choices, but they're going to be a couple albums that I just say, all right, here is a defining 1984 album.
I'm sure we'll do that too.
Yep, exactly. So that is next week on the show. Get in touch with us. You can email us at soundographypodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at The Soundography. You can also check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/TheSoundography. Everything else you'll find right there at our website, soundography.com. You can check out the archives of this episode and also find links to the playlist that we talked about earlier, the Amazon link to the greatest hits of the Spice Girls, as well as a link to our Patreon. Go check that out as well. That's going to do it. But this ended, man. We're done with our Spice Girls talk. I'm going to go mourn, sadly. all right. On behalf of Hammond Chamberlain, this is Brian Ibbett saying thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time right here on Soundography.
Part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.